According to real estate standards, Mother's 8-room brown shingled house in the University District was just a modest dwelling in a respectable neighborhood, near good schools and adequate for an ordinary family. To me, that night and always, that shabby house with its broad welcoming porch, dark woodwork, cluttered dining room plate rail, large fragrant kitchen, easy book-filled firelit living room, 4 elastic bedrooms, one of them always ice cold, roomy old-fashioned bathrooms, and huge cluttered basement represents the ultimate in charm, warmth, and luxury. It's something about Mother, who, with one folding chair and a plumber's candle, could make the North Pole homey. And it's something about the warmth and loyalty and laughter of a big family. It's a wonderful thing to know that you can come home anytime from anywhere and just open the door and belong. That everybody will shift until you fit, and that from that day on, it's a matter of sharing everything. When you share your money, your clothes, and your food with a mother, a brother, and 3 sisters, your portion may be meager, but by the same token, when you share unhappiness, loneliness, and anxiety about the future with a mother, a brother, and 3 sisters, there isn't much left for you. 2 things I noticed immediately. Mother still smelled like violets, and Mary still believed that accomplishment was merely a matter of willpower. "I hear that we are sliding into a depression and that jobs are very hard to find," I told Mary about 3 o'clock the next morning as she and Mother and I sat in the breakfast nook eating hot cinnamon toast and drinking coffee. Mary said, "There are plenty of jobs, but the trouble with most people, and I know because I'm always getting jobs for my friends, is that they stay home with the covers pulled up over their heads waiting for some employer to come creeping in looking for them. Anyway, what are you worrying about? You've got a job as private secretary to a mining engineer." I said, "But Mary, I don't know shorthand, and I can only type about 20 words a minute." Mary clunked her coffee cup into her saucer and looked directly at me with flashing amber eyes. "Leave the 90 words on the typewriter and the 150 words a minute in shorthand to the grubs who like that kind of work," she said. "You're lucky. You have a brain. Use it. Act like an executive, and you get treated like an executive." And usually fired, she neglected to add. It was very reassuring, in spite of a sneaking suspicion I had that if put to a test, I would always prove out the grub type, not the executive, and that only by becoming so proficient in shorthand that I could take down thoughts would I be able to hold down even a very ordinary job. "I have been planning to go to night school," I told Mary. "Not necessary at all," she said. "Experience and self-confidence are what you need, and you'll never find them at night school. Have you ever taken a look at what goes to night school? No? Well, they aren't executives, I'll tell you that. Now go to bed and forget about shorthand. I'll always be able to find us jobs doing something, and whatever it is, I'll show you how to do it." That was Mary's slogan at home. Downtown, it was, "Just show me the job, and I'll produce a sister to do it." And for some years, until Dee Dee and Allison were old enough to work and she had figured how to fit Mother into her program, I was it. That night, I dreamed I was going to play in one of Miss Welcome's recitals, and I hadn't practiced and didn't know my piece. From 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon until 2 o'clock Monday morning, the house was filled with people. Mary, who was very popular, was being intellectual, so her friends were mostly musicians, composers, writers, painters, readers of hard, dull books, and pansies. They took the front off the piano and played on the strings. They sat on the floor and read aloud the poems of Baudelaire, John Donne, and Rupert Brooke. They put loud symphonies on the record player and talked over them. They discussed politics and the state of the world. They all called Mother Sydney and tried in vain to convince her that she was prostituting her mind by reading the Saturday Evening Post. Mother said, "Yes," and ignored them. One of Mary's favorite friends, a beautiful, brilliant Jewish boy, played "With a Song in My Heart" on the strings of the piano and told me I had a face like a cameo, and I grew giddy with excitement. Anne and Joan loved the laughter and the people, too, and Saturday night, when I was putting them to bed, Anne said, "Oh, Betty, I just love this fambly."